From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
I was invited recently to be a guest on a podcast called The Wild Story from the Native Plant Society of New Jersey that talks about plants, of course, and ecology, but unlike other garden-related podcasts, it also explores poetry. I was intrigued because I recognized the names of many of its other recent guests, from Doug Tallamy to Barbara Kingsolver, and thought it would be fun to get to know its co-hosts a bit better, and they're my guests today. So more in a moment, but first, these messages.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners at wholesale prices. On the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, highmowingseeds.com. And by White Flower Farm, offering a wide range of carefully selected and expertly grown garden plants. On the web, whiteflowerfarm.com.
Anne E. Wallace, the poet laureate of Jersey City, and Kim Carrero, a Rutgers Master Gardener and Director of State Programs, are co-hosts of The Wild Story, a monthly podcast that debuted in August 2023 from the Native Plant Society of New Jersey that fuses the worlds of nature and poetry. And I'm glad to welcome them here today. Hello to both of you.
Hi, Margaret. Thank you so much for having us.
Yes,
a
hello.
Treat.
Good. Yeah. It's good to meet again.
Yes.
Even virtually. So I thought we'd do a little background first, because this is an unusual fusion that you have going, and you both have different backgrounds and so forth, and I wanted to get a little bit of that. So, Kim, can you tell us a little bit about the Native Plant Society of New Jersey? Like, it has chapters and educational programs. I mean, lots of great, interesting stuff. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. It does. It was founded in 1983. But it has grown. We have 15 chapters throughout the state of New Jersey, all over. And, you know, before the pandemic, I think there were 400 members. But after the pandemic, they saw a massive growth in members. We're now up to 1,400 members across the state, which is great. And it's made up of people who really care about ecology and creating wildlife habitat, and botanists and scientists and entomologists. It has an incredible following, and it's really sustained itself over the years. And and we do all kinds of programs. I mean, the society just gave away 21 mini grants across the state, and $2,000 grants for conservation. So they're very big on education.
Yeah, and there's an amazing wealth of resources on the society's website. All these past virtual program recordings. And I'll give the link so that listeners can avail themselves of them. That they're accessible there, including your annual fall conference that took place in early November. I mean, you know, many hours of high quality learning there alone. And another resource I noticed when I was, you know, clicking around was there's a rain garden manual that's downloadable, like how to make a rain garden, which is another important topic in this era of climate change and sort of general havoc out there in the ecology.
True. And there's also another one, how to make a school garden, how to create a school garden. And I think that is new this year. But we're also translating our materials into Spanish, which is important. And so that's happening.
Yeah. So Anne, all of what, you know, what Kim was just talking about, it might be more the expected kind of output or content from a plant society and its website. And maybe even if it had a podcast, its podcast. But the poetry angle is a little bit different. And this is your expertise. And I want to know if you could tell us kind of how did the idea come about? And do I remember correctly that maybe the poetry part started with some Instagram live events or something like that. I don't know.
That's correct. Shred of
knowledge here in my addled old brain.
Yeah, we started this as an Instagram live feature on one of the chapters, the Hudson County chapter. Kim and I both live in Jersey City, which is in Hudson County, right across the river from New York City. That's the New York metropolitan area. So we started this as an Instagram live feature on the chapter's Instagram page. And these were short interviews once a week with a poet. They would read one poem and we would talk about it. And that would be that. And so about 15 minutes. That was really inspiring. And we just felt really fueled by listening to poetry, slowing down once a week, hear a poem, talk to a poet, and think about the different ways that the natural world has impacted or made its way into their work. And as a source of inspiration, and I think the interesting thing that came out of that also was that poets tap into nature in so many different ways, right? It can be a site of history. It can resonate on a cultural level. It can be a place of healing. It wasn't just about gardening and just about flowers, for instance, right? So, and also what we noticed, or what I noticed in hosting those, was that poets were slowing down. Well, poets always slow down to observe the world. That's part of poetry. But we were noticing that people were doing this outside. And this is coming out of, you know, we were still really in the pandemic. This is summer 2022. Things were not fully open. But what we noticed was that people were really noticing the nature around them and using that as and really leaning into it and finding meaning there. And so we wanted to expand it the next year because Instagram doesn't, you know, we love Instagram, but these live features weren't getting the audience that we thought the poets deserved. So we thought, how about a podcast?
So now the podcast is once a month, I think, and it's longer. It's like an hour and a half or so, and there are multiple segments, and each of you does different ones during during each show. And there are poetry segments, and there are sort of ecology, nature, garden segments, and so it's a mix. It's a real mix. Yeah. So just a little bit more background. So Kim, your personal gardening. I mean, you're a master gardener, a Rutgers master gardener, for example. So you obviously garden. During the pandemic, did you get deeper into it? Like a lot of people took it up, but did you get deeper into it? Did it shift for you?
I did, because again, just going back to what Anne was saying about slowing down, that's what happened to me. And I started to notice things that I wasn't paying attention to. I was rushing around my life like a lot of other people. And so I'd always gardened. We bought our house in 2011 with a small backyard, but I found, you know, myself doing more birding during the pandemic and taking walks, right? And I met the wonderful people of the Bergen County Audubon Society who really taught me that I was doing things very wrong. And so I spent a lot of time removing plants and planting native plants and putting in shrubs and creating a hedge row that, you know, we talk about in the episode we did with you. And it really changed the way that I saw the natural world. And then I got involved in the Native Plant Society soon after that. But also listening to your show and listening to Jennifer Jewell's show and reading all of those books that you recommended and that other great podcasters had recommended. And so it was a real shift for me. And it just over time has gotten deeper and deeper. And I've become more passionate about it.
Yeah. I always say the birds taught me to garden. So I understand the bird thing frequently leads us deeper. and for you, is there a garden or is it nature or what's your personal?
Yeah. I've been a gardener for decades. And I have, but I wasn't a native plant gardener until the pandemic, really. And but not in the beginning, because I was very sick with COVID and then long COVID. But I have these big windows at the back of my house that look out on my yard, and I was sick on my couch. I was on strict bed rest for months, and it was very difficult for me to stand or walk. But I have these windows at the back, and I could look at my garden, and that fueled me. I would could watch the birds. I came to know the pair of pigeons that arrived every morning at about 11 a.m. And I'd never paid attention to pigeons before. Those are city birds and not exciting, but they had character. And I even read a poem about, like, for the house finches, like just turning my yard over to them, because I knew I wasn't going to be out there that summer, and I wasn't able to, but it was a sustaining place for other creatures, and that's really fueling and a really beautiful thing to see. And then later in the summer of 2020, when I was able to walk again, I would walk up and down my block with my daughter, who was also recovering from long COVID and dealing with long COVID. And we would walk, and we walked slowly. And that, having to slow down, like Kim said, our circumstances were very different, but there was a slowing down that was forced upon us. And there was a silver lining to that.
You would probably both, maybe you already know her work, a professor, a science professor, Joan Strossman, who wrote a book, Slow Birding, which would appeal to both of you, I think. I've had her on the show a couple of times, and yeah, it's the reminder to slow down is critically important, I think, for so many reasons now. So I've loved poetry since taking a course at NYU, like 100 or 200 years ago. It was called like Modern English and American Poetry, and I think that was the name of the textbook too. And modern is in quotes right now because obviously, what was modern then isn't so modern right now. So, we studied poets like William Butler Yeats, and actually I named one of my books, from a line of one of his poems, and I Shall Have Some Peace There is the name of my book, but from the poem The Lake Isle of Innisfree, and T.S. Eliot and William Carlos Williams with his Red Wheelbarrow and so on. And I think on the show you invite contemporary poets, and they may be people that we haven't heard of, and you kind of in almost in the same way that with a lot of the ecology segments or the gardening segments, maybe techniques or ideas that we haven't heard of or that we don't understand yet, but that are ahas for us. So yeah, there's contemporary people, yes. Is that who is it?
Absolutely. And some of the names are familiar, like Barbara Kingsolver, who most people would not know as a poet. She is most famous for her novels, but she also is a poet. We had her on, in fact, we had her on an Instagram live feature way back, and we were able to recast that and include it in a recent episode this summer. And Ross Gay is also a very well-known poet, just beloved for many reasons. He brings joy, right? And
Delight.
delight,
It's all about
delight.
Delight. I've had him on the show, and I've also written about him in the New York Times. Yeah, he's a lot of fun. And he's a great gardener. He loves, he's passionate about his garden and
Oh,
about riding his
absolutely.
bicycle. Those are two
I
things that he
know.
loves.
And about his community and
Yes,
bringing
yes.
all those things together. And
Yes.
that's something we need more of, that joy and delight that he brings. And he brings this wonder to looking at the world. It's important to say that when somebody like Ross Gay is looking at the world with delight, that's not an easy decision to make necessarily. The world is not always full of delight. And we also had J. Drew Lanham on this past spring, and he has a book called, he's a poet from South Carolina, has a book called Joy is the Justice We Give Ourselves. Joy and delight are decisions. Those are deliberate things that deliberate actions we take in a world that's so fraught with pain, with loss.
Yes.
And so it's really, I find, empowering to see poets make that turn and invite us into spaces where we can just think about awe
Yeah.
and
Yeah.
wonder.
Yeah.
And then we also,
Sorry.
Yes,
Go ahead.
sorry. Oh, and I was going to say, and we also have, we have such a range of poets. So we have some that are fairly well known. I mean, contemporary poetry is not full of household names for sure,
Right.
but we have such a range that, and that's deliberate. We want to have different kinds of poets at different points in their career, because we want to bring our audience. We just want to be promoting good, important work. So yeah.
So, speaking of contemporary poets, the poet laureate of the United States, the current one, Ada Limón, she, I, anytime a gardener, I want to just share this little bit from the end of one of her poems, a poem called "Cyrus and the Snakes," about her brother holding a snake up, picking up a snake and holding it and then letting it go, and it ends with the lines, "I want to honor a man who wants to hold a wild thing only for a second, long enough to admire it fully, and then wants to watch it safely return to its life, bends to be sure the grass closes up behind it." And I just think, oh God, isn't that
Yeah,
everything? That's
it
exactly how we
is.
should be to every other living thing, yes?
It's what we need. Those are lines we need.
So,
Yeah.
I don't think of her as a nature poet, but again, nature is infused in, her work, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And she has a whole project right now, which the name of which I'm blanking on at the moment, about pairing poetry and wild spaces, outdoor spaces. And I was in Provincetown this fall, and Provincetown, Massachusetts, and I was on a walk, and I was just delighted to see that there was a poem in on a like a board in the in this on at the beginning of this nature trail, and it was part of Ada Limón's project of putting poetry outdoors for us to encounter. And it was a Mary Oliver poem, of course, because it was Provincetown, Massachusetts, which is where Mary Oliver lived. So, when we stumble upon poetry in places we don't expect it, it's just, kind of can take your breath away.
So Kim, again, you're a master gardener. You've had training in a lot of aspects of gardening, but in I don't know, what have you guys done, like 17 or 18 episodes so far, something like that?
Yeah,
You're yeah.
we're.
So yeah, you've interviewed a lot of people. Is there something that you've learned, some aha, something that stands out for you, highlight that you've taken away from the experts you've interviewed, or something that's changed your practices or anything?
I think so many things, and I spent some time going over the episodes just to kind of refresh my memory. And we've been so lucky to talk to some extraordinary ecologists and experts. We also have a segment I wanted to mention with Dr. Randy Eckel, who gives expert advice in every episode. And I learn from her every day. And we just recorded for the episode that's coming up next week last night, and she was talking about fall cleanup and leaving the leaves. And it's just, it's getting the opportunity to talk with people like Uli Lorimer, Nancy Lawson, and they provide so much information. So we have a wild story garden in Jersey City. We are partnering with the Museum of Jersey City History on this project. And we were lucky enough to get a Xerces Society grant to support launching this. But it's right in the middle of a very dense urban population. So everything that I've learned, we try to take into the community and into the people. But, Rebecca McMacken, who was with us, is talking a lot right now about xenophobia, and she's really teaching us another way to communicate, another way to use language. And I think that's one of the biggest things that I'm trying to put into my own practice and take away and use new words.
So about plants that are aliens versus plants that are natives? Isn't it?
Native,
Yeah.
invasive.
And using and the how charged certain of the words are. Indeed. Indeed. And like with so many things, we've made it two sides very diametrically opposed and lots of yelling across the gap in between, you know? I read, speaking of poets and so forth, a writer, I had read his memoir, I don't know, maybe 5, 6 years ago. Saeed Jones is his name, and he's currently doing an artist in residence at part of Harvard, and he's a Black queer man. And I read his memoir, and he's a poet as well, and he has a beautiful newsletter that he sends out each week. And earlier this week, before the elections and so forth, and I don't want to, get into politics, but just I think this is true for everyone, no matter which side or where you stand. And I'm not going to do it justice, but he said in the newsletter the idea that if all around us feels like fire, we have to remember we're the water. And I just thought, oh, Saeed, thank you. That just we're the water, and that was very helpful to me. In tumultuous times, it's good to have these poetic images like that to hold on to, just like nature images, visual images.
I keep thinking about a line from Audre Lorde, poet activist, who has a line that's very famous. Poetry is not a luxury. And a lot of people think poetry that poetry is the thing that gets read at a wedding or a funeral. We turn to it in big moments in life, but we need it in the everyday. We need it in moments of upheaval, of uncertainty, of despair even. And we need it to motivate us and drive us forward, right? We can be the water, right? As you said. Yeah, absolutely.
So and I apologize to him for not quoting him precisely, but it just came into my head when we were speaking. And then also you both said you're in Jersey City, and I was thinking a friend of mine who lives in the Bronx right across from the Palisades of New Jersey sent me pictures of smoke rising out of part of the park there. There are wildfires happening at the moment in parts of New Jersey, including in part of the parks in the Palisades. So speaking of fire.
And we keep getting I keep getting notifications on my phone about the high risk for fires. We've the whole Northeast has been in such a drought lately that we don't normally think about that much in New Jersey, but we need to.
And for you, has one of the non-poetry segments, has there been something you've brought home to your garden that you've learned?
Oh,
Because we have that
absolutely.
maybe 3 minutes or so left, and I just wanted to ask you that for sure before we.
I approach my garden so differently now than I used to. And part of it was, like I said, when I was sort of turning it over to the wildlife that lives outside my windows in the space. But since then, and also fueled by all of these conversations we've had with ecologists and experts, I've really thought about my garden as a space of community for the wildlife outside, and it's not just for me. And so how do I garden in a way that encourages wild things to live there, even in a city space, even in a small city space? So it's just been a real shift in my approach to gardening. It's been incredibly meaningful.
I think, Kim, on your Instagram, I think it was, I saw pictures of a big pile of upturned invasive woody plants that had been, eradicated from somewhere that you were working on with a friend, I think, or something, doing some
That's
cleanups. And
another Native Plant Society project that we volunteer for. So everybody that's a part of the Native Plant Society of New Jersey is a volunteer in some capacity. And stewardship is very important to me. So we've been working on this garden for the elderly for 3 years now, and we've run out of space. And I real estate in the city, these small city parks is hard to come by. So we finally made a decision to really go for it and take out things that were not helping the biodiversity crisis, and And we added some more native shrubs in there, and it will be beautiful in the spring, and it will be alive and bustling.
I think you said winter berries are one of the things that were going in, and the birds will be very, very happy
Yeah,
about
yeah. No, I'm
that.
excited about it. We planted some winter berries, some American hollies, and some inkberry is going in. So it's exciting. And I'm just looking for females now because I've got a lot of males in there. So
Oh, you mean fruiting female shrubs?
yeah, for the hollies.
I
Yeah.
usually use like one. I have big old groups, and I usually use one male for about 10 females or something.
Yeah.
And one of the beautiful things about that garden space that Kim's been working on is that it is visible from, it's on a corner lot and it's visible to the community. A lot of times in cities, our yards are in the back, right? When like my yard, nobody can see it unless they're in my yard. But it's really so important to have nature visible from the street in a city. And so
A
I love,
reminder, yes. And
people love it when they walk by.
And I think what's happening is the people that live on the block are now ringing my doorbell asking if they can get native plants. You know, so they're building their own gardens, and
It's
that's nice.
exciting.
Well, I'm glad to have discovered you and gotten to know you a little bit and bring you to meet my audience here that's listening, hopefully, and reading the transcript over on awaytogarden.com. And so Anne Wallace and Kim Carrera, I'm glad to talk, and I hope I'll talk to you again soon. Thank you.
Oh,
Thank you
thank you,
so much,
Margaret,
Margaret.
so much.
And I hope I'll speak to all the rest of you soon again, too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com and on Facebook and on Instagram as at awaytogarden. And happy gardening and reading some poetry meantime.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners at wholesale prices. On the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, highmowingseeds.com. And by White Flower Farm, offering a wide range of carefully selected and expertly grown garden plants. On the web, whiteflowerfarm.com.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.